using miso. Anyone who has eaten in a Japanese restaurant is familiar with miso soup. Soup is indeed a wonderful use of miso, but miso is an extremely versatile flavoring with many other applications. Sweet miso and finger-lickin' miso can be served as is for use as a table condiment, but generally, saltier, longer-fermented misos are too strong for that. Here are a few ideas for using miso in cooking and other food preparation. Miso marinades. Miso makes a great base for marinades to flavor meats, vegetables, tofu, or tempeh, or really anything you might barbecue, broil, roast, or stir-fry. Mix miso with vinegar, oil, hot sauce, honey or sugar, beer, wine, sake or mirin, sweet Japanese cooking wine, herbs, almost anything. Combine well, spread over the surfaces of the food being marinated, and marinate for several hours or several days, turning periodically and recovering surfaces as necessary. Leave residual marinade on the food so when you cook it will caramelize. Miso dressings, sauces, and spreads. Fat-rich bases such as seed and nut butters, yogurt, and sour cream are ideal companions for miso's dense, salty flavor. Miso tahini is a vegetarian classic, but miso peanut butter and miso yogurt combinations are just as delicious. Start with a ratio of about 4 parts base to each part miso, and adjust the proportions to your liking. Thin this mixture with citrus juice, kraut or kimchi juice, pot liquor from cooking vegetables, or water. Add any other flavorings you like. Depending upon how thick or thin it is, the same mixture could be presented as a spread, sauce, or dressing. Miso pickles. Miso is a great pickling medium. Sweet miso porridge. Sweet miso, with its short fermentation, generally still has enzymes present that can digest complex carbohydrates into simple sugars. Christian Elwell, one of the founders of the South River Miso Company, first shared this technique with me. Cook porridge, without salt, in the evening. Cool to below 140 degrees Fahrenheit or 60 degrees Celsius and add sweet miso. Stir well to distribute the miso in the porridge, cover and leave in a moderately warm spot overnight. By morning, the porridge will have liquefied somewhat and become much sweeter. Gently reheat and enjoy sweet porridge. Miso soup. Classic and wonderful, miso is generally the last ingredient to be added. The idea is to avoid boiling the miso or subjecting it to unnecessary heat. Overcooking spoils the miso's prized aroma while also destroying microorganisms and enzymes which aid digestion. Note Shurtleff and Aoyagi. Of course, hot soup temperatures even below boiling will destroy most of the organisms, but by avoiding boiling, some enzymes may be preserved and certainly volatile flavor compounds. Typically, miso soup is a simple broth or dashi, a stock made with kombu seaweed and sometimes bonito, fish, flakes. And as Bill Shurtleff taught me, you can enliven a simple miso broth with a little fresh grated ginger. Any soup or stew may be enriched by the addition of miso, including soups made from meat or fish-based stocks. Before adding miso, remove the soup from the heat. Use a ladle or mug to scoop out a few ounces of soup. Mash the miso into that so it dissolves into a liquid. Figure about 1 tablespoon or 15 milliliters miso per cup of soup, unless the soup already has a rich base, in which case use less. Stir the miso mixture back into the soup and taste. Repeat if necessary. Soy sauce. The English word soy comes from the Japanese name for soy sauce, shoyu. Indeed, stable fermented soy sauce, an indispensable flavoring in Chinese, Japanese, and other East Asian cuisines, was the soy food that first found its way into Europe and is widely used today in Western kitchens. Soy sauce is the most widespread fermented legume product on Earth, states anthropologist Sidney Mintz. The earliest soy sauces were simply the liquids that pooled at the top of vats of fermenting soybean pastes, such as miso and its Chinese precursor, jiang. But over time, distinctive processes emerged for making soy sauce. The biggest difference between miso and soy sauce, in terms of process, is that in miso, the aspergillus molds are generally grown on grains, koji, and it is the enzymes produced by the mold that act upon the soybeans, rather than the mold itself. In soy sauce, the aspergillus molds are grown not only on grains but also directly on the soybeans, leading to the formation of more complicated metabolic compounds, a higher degree of protein hydrolysis and liquefaction, and the production of much sharper and stronger flavor in shoyu than in miso. From a microbial perspective, soy sauce is among the most complex of fermented foods, involving three distinct groups of organisms, aspergillus molds, lactic acid bacteria, and yeasts, in two distinct fermentations. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization reports, during these fermentations, several intimate relationships take place between molds, bacteria, and yeasts, resulting in the production of a host of different flavor and aroma compounds. But beyond growing the molds on soybeans and generally with wheat, the rest of the microbial succession takes care of itself with the addition of a small amount of live culture miso or soy sauce as starter. Across Asia, there are many distinctive forms of soy sauce, some incorporating fish, hot peppers, palm sugar, or other spices. In our time, much soy sauce is being manufactured by acid hydrolysis of defatted soybeans. In other words, the byproduct after pressing out the oil. This method does not involve fermentation. The acid hydrolyzed soy sauce is less attractive in aroma and flavor because of lack of aromatic substances, such as esters, alcohols, and carbonyl compounds, which are derived from the fermentation process, according to the Journal of Industrial Microbiology. In some countries, a combination of fermentation and acid hydrolysis procedures are used for making less expensive soy sauce. High-quality soy sauce is made exclusively by the fermentation process. I have tried fermenting two Japanese styles of soy sauce, shoyu, made from soybeans and roasted wheat, and tamari, made from soybeans alone, with no wheat or other grain. I had much better results with the shoyu than the tamari, so it is the shoyu process I describe here. I assumed at first that soy sauce with wheat was an Americanized version, but I now understand that wheat has been used in China for thousands of years and has a long tradition of use in soy sauces, and in fact adds depth and complexity to soy sauce's flavor. For shoyu, grow aspergillus molds on a mix of soybeans and wheat. 3 pounds of each will yield about a gallon of shoyu. Soak soybeans overnight, then steam until soft enough to crush easily, 5 to 6 hours over boiling water or an hour and a half in a pressure cooker. Meanwhile, dry roast wheat berries, soft wheat is best, or bulgur in a cast iron skillet, stirring frequently until it is aromatic and beginning to brown. Slight charring is desirable to develop flavor, says Betty Steckmeyer of Gem Cultures, whose detailed directions first guided me through the process. Betty's excellent directions accompany all the Gem Cultures starters. If you are using whole wheat berries, coarsely grind in a grain grinder, not into flour, but breaking each grain into several pieces. No need to grind if you are using bulgur. Once soybeans are well cooked, drain them well, then, while still steaming hot, toss with roasted cracked wheat and allow to cool to body temperature. Once cooled, add starter. Gem recommends 2 teaspoons for this 1 gallon quantity, and incubate. After about 48 hours, but possibly shorter or longer, once your koji is covered with white mold and possibly beginning to show early signs of sporulation, yellow-green patches, developing, it's time to mix it with the other ingredients into the maromi, which will ferment for 6 months to 2 years into shoyu. Based on the weight of the dry beans and wheat you started with, combine 40% salt, for 3 pounds or 1.4 kilograms each, that would be 2.4 pounds or 1.1 kilograms, with water equal in weight to the combined weight of the beans, wheat, and salt. In this case, 8.4 pounds or 3.8 kilograms, roughly a gallon or 4 liters. Stir well to dissolve salt, then add koji. Also add a little nama, raw, shoyu, or miso to introduce lactic acid bacteria and yeasts. Mix everything together and transfer to a crock or other fermentation vessel. Secure a cloth over the crock to keep flies out. Stir daily for the first week, then once or twice a week, definitely twice a week in summer. Regular stirring should prevent mold, but if you encounter surface molds, skim off and discard. Keep the fermenting shoyu in a heated space. If the volume diminishes due to evaporation, add dechlorinated water as necessary to maintain the original volume. Traditional fermentation continues for 1 to 3 years at ambient temperatures, as the color and flavor become more intense, according to Steinkraus. The mature maromi is a very dark rust color with a thick consistency and pleasant aroma. It is not necessary to wait 3 years to try your shoyu. Give it at least a year, then harvest a portion of it and allow the rest to continue maturing. The hardest part of the process, waiting aside, is physically pressing the liquid shoyu from the chunky moromi. Place moromi in a mesh canvas or other coarsely woven pressing sack or a few layers of cheesecloth. Twist it and press to force out liquid. Use your body weight and all your might. Press against a sturdy board arranged so that liquid drains into a bowl. Get someone else to help you to double the force pressing liquid from the moromi. After you press as much as you think you can, open the sack, stir the contents, twist the bag as tight as you can, and press again. Use your engineering acumen to devise a makeshift press to express as much shoyu liquid as possible from the moromi. Store shoyu in bottles in a refrigerator or cool spot. Mold may develop on the exposed surface of unpasteurized shoyu. If so, remove and discard the mold and don't worry about it. Enjoy your rich, complex, homemade shoyu as a seasoning and save some to use as a starter for your next batch. The pressed moromi can be used as miso or as a medium for pickling vegetables. Fermented black beans, Hamanato and Daochi. Fermented black beans are whole fermented soybeans, known as qi or ji in China. They become black as a result of fermentation, but may be made from any soybeans. They are little known in the West, but are considered to be the ancestor of all the more widely known fermented soybean pastes and sauces. Ironically, this oldest of all fermented soy foods is, today, the least widely known worldwide, write William Shurtleff and Akiko Aoyagi. The fermented black beans best known and most widely available in the West are the Chinese fermented black beans, Daochi. A Japanese style, which I have made, is known as Hamanato. Note that Hamanato is completely different from the more widely known ferment called Natto, described in the next section. I first became intrigued about Hamanato from a conversation with Cynthia Bates, a fermented soybean aficionado who has run the Tempe lab at the farm in Tennessee for decades, who told me that the most delicious fermented soy she had ever tried was Hamanato. Indeed, the luscious, creamy, salty, sour, umami soybeans pack some dense and compelling flavor. To make Hamanato, soak soybeans overnight and steam until soft. Drain the beans and allow them to cool to body temperature. Inoculate with soy koji, available from Gem Cultures. Incubate as described in Making Koji, Chapter 10, at 80 to 90 degrees Fahrenheit, or 27 to 32 degrees Celsius, for 48 hours or longer. In this case, you want the mold to sporulate, so let it grow until it turns green. Once the mold sporulates on the soybeans, dry them in the sun or in a dehydrator. They need not be 100% crispy dry. An account by a USDA scientist investigating Japanese ferments notes that in commercial Japanese Hamanato production, beans are dried until the moisture is reduced to 12%. I have no means to gauge moisture content to that degree of precision, but the idea is that the beans should be mostly dry, but retain some moisture and with it softness. In the second stage of the fermentation, place these dried molded beans in a crock or other vessel that can be weighed down. Mix a 15% brine, 15% salt based on the weight of the water, to cover it. That proportion is heavily diluted by the beans themselves. My pound of soybeans batch took less than 3 cups of brine to cover, and the brined beans filled just about a quart/liter of volume. Add thinly sliced ginger to the brined beans, stir well, weigh down, cover with a cloth to keep flies away, and ferment at ambient temperatures for 6 months to a year. You can taste Hamanato beans as they ferment to sample their evolving flavor. When you deem them ready, dry them once again, in the sun or in a dehydrator. I dried mine after 6 months of fermentation. At first, while they were wet, it was difficult to separate out individual beans without crushing them. I just dumped the fermenting beans onto a baking sheet, broke them up into clumps, and put the tray outside under bright sun. Within a few hours, the clumps had dried enough that it was easier to crumble them into individual beans. As the beans dried, I was able to separate them into individual beans that looked like raisins. I also separated out the strips of ginger, which were super tasty, and sliced them into slivers. After a few days of alternating between days in the sun and nights with a fan blowing on them, the soy nuggets were dry. Don't overdry them. They shouldn't be hard or brittle, but still soft and supple, like raisins. Hamanato is so delicious. I enjoyed them as snacks, but they are too salty to eat more than a few. I used them mostly as a deeply flavored base for sauces and dressings, modeled loosely on the renowned Chinese black bean sauce. The Chinese black beans are fermented in a nearly identical process. Cover a few tablespoonfuls of Hamanato with water. Let them soak in water a few minutes, then remove beans from water and mince them finely. Save the soaking water. Heat oil and stir-fry garlic, shallots, and/or onions with the minced soy nuggets. Then add soaking water, stock, rice beer or vinegar, soy sauce, hot sauce, a little honey, sugar or other sweetener, any other beloved condiments, and a little cornstarch dissolved in water to thicken. Keep stirring the sauce as it cooks for a few minutes, until it begins to thicken. Enjoy this compelling fermented bean sauce on almost anything. You can also simply add them whole into sauces or braising liquids that will cook for a while. Chinese black beans, dao qi, the traditional basis for this sauce, are made in a process similar to Hamanato. Soybeans, yellow or black, are soaked, cooked until soft, cooled, inoculated with aspergillus spores or mixed mold cultures, and incubated around 80 to 90 degrees Fahrenheit, or 27 to 32 degrees Celsius for about 72 hours, until the mold on the beans turns green, indicating sporulation. In contrast to the Hamanato method described above, in the Dao Qi method, the beans are not dried at this stage, but rather washed to remove the spores, which would impart bitter flavor. For the second stage fermentation, the beans are fermented in brine, sometimes with sugar and/or hot chili paste, for 4 to 6 months, then dried. Natto. Natto is a Japanese soy ferment that produces a slimy, mucilaginous coating on the beans, something like okra. In Japanese, this quality is called neba. Natto that is extra slimy is neba neba. High viscosity of the mucilage is the most important criterion of a good natto, according to the Journal of Food Science. The flavor of natto carries notes of ammonia, like some cheeses or overripe tempeh, which gets stronger as it ferments longer. I have come to love natto, but many people not raised on it find it unappealing and even scary. Natto is quite widely available in Japanese markets and restaurants, although in restaurants more often than not I have had waiters try to talk me out of ordering it. I suppose because the uninitiated so frequently dislike it. Natto is definitely not for everyone, but some people really like it. And if you are an adventurous eater, I would definitely recommend trying it. As with many foods, how it is prepared and presented can make all the difference. Natto-like ferments are found in China, Tan Shi, Thailand, Thua Nao, Korea, Jongkukjang and Damsujang, Nepal, Kanima, and elsewhere in East Asia. A similar group of ferments prepared from other seeds are found across West Africa, next section. Natto and its relations are different from all the other soy ferments in that no molds are involved in the fermentation, nor any lactic acid bacteria. Bacillus subtilis, subvariety natto, formerly known as Bacillus natto, the bacteria that transform soybeans into natto, are alkaline-forming rather than acidifying. I have mostly made natto with a starter I purchased from GEM imported from Japan. You can also start it from a commercially available natto or previous homemade batch. Use straw as a starter, as was traditionally practiced, or even let natto spontaneously develop on soybeans in the recommended temperature range, which it generally will, as it is typically present on beans and its spores are extremely heat tolerant. The only challenging aspect of making natto is finding or creating an appropriate incubation space. The ideal incubation temperature for fermenting natto is about 104 degrees Fahrenheit or 40 degrees Celsius, though it can tolerate a much wider range, from about body temperature to 113 degrees Fahrenheit or 45 degrees Celsius. I usually use the oven with pilot light for incubating natto. You can also use a pre-warmed insulated cooler with hot water bottles to help maintain temperature. Natto is typically made with soybeans. I have tried to make it with other types of beans and always produced something edible, but in some cases without the characteristic slimy natto coating. To make natto, rinse beans and soak overnight in a generous amount of water, as soybeans more than double in size during soaking. Boil or steam the soaked soybeans until they are soft enough to easily crush between your thumb and index finger, about 5 hours. If you have a pressure cooker, steam under pressure for about 45 minutes. Steaming soybeans is better than boiling them in a pressure cooker, as skins can slip off beans into the water, rise in the foam, and clog the release valve. explosions have been known to occur. Once soybeans are cooked soft, drain and begin to cool. If you're using spores to start your natto, inoculate the beans while they are still steaming hot, around 175 degrees Fahrenheit or 80 degrees Celsius. The literature suggests that the spores not only tolerate but benefit from heat shock at temperatures as high as this. Use whatever proportion of starter its source recommends. Such a minuscule amount of starter is required that it needs to be mixed with another more voluminous powdery medium, flour, in order to effectively distribute it. If your natto starter is a previous batch of natto, use starter at a ratio of roughly 5%. Mince starter natto finely, add a little incubation temperature water to it, and add it to cooked soybeans only after they have cooled to incubation temperatures, since the growing bacteria do not possess the heat tolerance of the spores. Either way, mix starter into the soybeans thoroughly, taking care to scrape the edges to be sure to incorporate all the beans. Spread cultured soybeans in an even layer, no deeper than 2 inches or 5 centimeters, in a glass or stainless steel baking pan. Cover them with plastic wrap, aluminum foil, or waxed paper to maintain humidity. Place in the incubation chamber and ferment for 6 to 24 hours, depending on the temperature and desired flavor. Monitor the incubation chamber and adjust the temperature as necessary by propping open to cool or adding bottles with hot water to heat. To test if the natto is ready, swirl the soybeans with chopsticks or a spoon and see if gooey strings form. Longer incubation will yield more pronounced stringiness and stronger flavor. If you want to try making natto without a starter, follow all the steps described above without inoculation. Do not pressure cook the beans if you are attempting a spontaneous natto fermentation, because the higher temperatures of pressure cooking would likely kill the spores that can survive boiling. Expect that the natto may take a little longer to develop and may have a stronger flavor than natto made with a selected bacterial strain. You could also try the traditional method of using straw as a starter. According to Shurtleff and Aoyagi, in the old days natto was generally made by simply wrapping cooked soybeans in rice straw and putting them in a warm place overnight until they became sticky. Fermentation enthusiast Sam Bett reports from Japan that he ate some wara, straw, natto that he bought at a grocery store. It has an earthier flavor than the styrofoam-packed varieties. It's also more pungent, far more sticky and stringy, and more delicious. Natto is rarely eaten plain. If you want to experience natto in its full glory in a classic Japanese way, mix some with a raw egg yolk and a little shoyu, mustard, and rice vinegar. Stir with chopsticks in a circular motion to merge the liquid condiments with the slimy bean coating. Enjoy on warm rice topped with chopped scallions and small pieces of nori seaweed. If you wish to avoid or downplay the sliminess of the beans, that can be minimized by incorporating the beans into nori rolls, salads, or savory pancakes, or mince them as an ingredient in sauces and dressings. Natto has received considerable attention in recent years for the health benefits of a unique compound called natto kinase, produced by the fermenting bacteria and found in the viscous goo. A 1987 report in the journal Cellular and Molecular Life Sciences announced that strong fibrinolytic activity, meaning that it breaks down blood clots, was demonstrated in what the investigators somewhat awkwardly described as the vegetable cheese natto. 15 years later, a review of the medical literature summarized, "All prior epidemiologic and clinical research points to natto kinase's effectiveness and safety for managing a wide range of diseases, including hypertension, atherosclerosis, coronary artery disease, such as angina, stroke, and peripheral vascular disease." Evidence from long-term use at high doses in Japanese people points to natto kinase as a safe nutrient that acts as a very powerful fibrinolytic agent. The latest research is exploring whether, in addition to breaking down fibrin, natto kinase may be effective in breaking down amyloid plaque characteristic of Alzheimer's disease. Because medicine always seeks to isolate active compounds from the foods they come from, natto kinase is more widely available as an extract in vitamin supplement shops than in the whole food form of natto. Dawa Dawa and related West African fermented seed condiments. Across West Africa, cuisines feature a range of natto-like fermented condiments made from the seeds of a number of wild and cultivated plants, some inedible unless fermented. Plants whose seeds are used in such preparations include melons, Citrullus vulgaris, African locust beans, Parkia biglobosa, African oil beans, Pentaclethra macrophylla, mesquite, Prosopis africana, baobab, Adansonia digitata, salmon tree, Albizia salmon, fluted pumpkin, Telpheria occidentalis, castor beans, Ricinus communis, and others, including, increasingly, soybeans. According to Nigerian microbiologist Oke Achi, the conventional substrates for condiment production are diverse, and each can be produced for more than one raw material. Like natto, these ferments are alkaline, produced by the action of Bacillus subtilis and closely related bacteria, and used as condiments and flavorings. A few of the more commonly used names for the products of these fermentations include Dawa Dawa and Ogiri in Nigeria, Sombala in Burkina Faso, Mali and Guinea, and Netetau in Senegal. One Dakar survey showed its use in almost all the main recipes of Senegalese cuisine. At the risk of overgeneralization, I am grouping these together to illustrate that the alkaline bacillus fermentation of beans and seeds is fairly widespread and not limited to a single geographic area. In my travels in West Africa in my youth, I undoubtedly ate stews flavored with some of these ferments, but unfortunately I was not aware of them and did not discern their flavors or inquire as to how they are produced. Yet, when I finally experimented with making Dawa Dawa and tried it as a seasoning in cooking, I realized how familiar its distinctive flavor was, a long-ago impression, barely conscious, of a deep umami undercurrent in the stews of West Africa. From the literature, I can see that the ferments making up this group are quite distinct, and specifics of preparations vary. However, they seem to exhibit some general patterns. Usually beans or seeds are boiled, sometimes for a very long time, until they are soft enough to manually dehull. Then they are dehulled and in some cases boiled again. In some traditions, seeds are fermented whole. In others, they are sliced or pounded. In some cases, ashes are mixed in. Typically, the preparation is wrapped in banana or other large leaves to maintain moisture. Usually, no starter is used, although in some cases, ferments are cultured by means of backslopping from a previous batch. Nonetheless, there is a predominant development of bacillus species during the various legume fermentation processes, according to Achi. The consistency of the fermenting vegetable mash as fermentation progressed could be described as thick, cheesy pudding. Fermentation times vary with substrate, environment, and tradition. In most cases, the completed ferments are sun-dried for storage because they do not keep well if the fermentation is allowed to continue long uninhibited. The major limitation I faced in trying to experiment with these ferments was lack of access to the specific seeds described in the literature. I tried it with mesquite seeds from Southwest Desert Mesquite Pods sent to me by my friend Brad Lancaster in Tucson, Arizona, but the seeds were so tiny that after an hour of dehulling, I had accumulated no more than about a teaspoonful of them. I wrapped these in an amaranth leaf, and they molded. I thought about trying it with castor beans, but my faith in the detoxifying powers of fermentation was challenged by my research, which I found just 1 milligram of ricin, the most toxic compound in the beans, can kill an adult. While the fermentation of the beans, as traditionally practiced, evidently detoxifies them, experimenting with a wild fermentation in a very different environment could potentially yield very different results. If I fermented a mash of castor beans, would I be prepared to taste it, knowing of the beans' potentially extreme toxicity? And would I want to encourage readers to do so? So, lacking access to any of the other African beans these condiments are made of, I followed the historical trend and tried the ferment with the number one global superstar legume, soybeans. Charles Parkuda et al. Summarized the process for soy Dawa Dawa. Soybeans are assorted, washed, soaked in water for 12 hours, and dehulled by hand. They are then cooked for 2 hours and incubated in calabashes lined with plantain leaves to ferment for 72 hours. Oke Achi describes a slightly different process. The cotyledons are spread in a raffia basket lined with banana leaves and then covered with several layers of the banana leaves. This is left to ferment for 2 to 3 days. Wood ash may be added. The fermented product is then sun-dried for 1 to 2 days to yield a dark brown or black product. I soaked soybeans overnight and manually dehulled by rubbing beans between the palms of my hands. I boiled soybeans about 4 hours until soft. Then I placed them, with no added ingredients whatsoever, in a glass pie dish lined with corn husks, no banana or plantain leaves, and wrapped them in the husks to maintain moisture and support bacterial growth. I covered the wrapped soybeans with an inverted bowl and left it in my oven, with the heat off, the illuminating lamp on, and the door propped open slightly to ferment. I left it about 36 hours, around 100 degrees Fahrenheit or 38 degrees Celsius. It was just like natto when it's getting really strong. What really distinguishes soy dawa dawa from natto is what you do next, which is to dry it. I dried mine as whole beans, although some of these condiment traditions grind it into a paste first. Sun dry if possible, or use a dehydrator or a low oven. The dried fermented beans are shelf stable. Grind them into a powder to use. Add to stews and other foods as a seasoning. No need to add a lot, just a dash of it adds a subtle yet dense layer of flavor. Senegalese food blogger Rama uses netetao, a condiment in this group, in one of her online recipes with a blunt warning. It has a very strong smell but adds such incredible flavor to stews. I love it, and now that I know about it, I intend to experiment more with using it. Yum! Fermenting tofu. Among the few traditional soy foods not fermented in their preparation is tofu. However, once it is tofu, it may be fermented. In fact, there are many different ways of fermenting tofu. Fermented tofu is known by various names, among them sufu and tofu roux. Tofu being the ultimate in bland foods, the process of fermentation gives it a more pronounced flavor. Fermented tofu is long renowned as one of those special gastronomic delectables that is often irresistible to the aficionado, but obnoxious to the uninitiated, observes H.G. Huang. Depending upon the process used and the length of fermentation, the resulting flavor can range from subtly sharp to overpoweringly acrid. The fermentation also improves tofu's digestibility. An 1861 Chinese food encyclopedia states, "Hardened tofu is difficult to digest, and it is not healthful for children, elderly persons, or ill persons. Sufu, which is prepared from tofu, is better because it is aged. It is very good for patients." The most comprehensive information on the subject that I've been able to find in English is yet another book by William Shurtleff and Akiko Aoyagi, their Book of Tofu. The most straightforward method they describe for fermenting tofu is to cut it into slices or bite-sized cubes and simply marinate them for a few days in miso, its Chinese equivalent jiang, or soy sauce. In China, this is known as jiang tofu. You can eat jiang tofu uncooked, prepare it any way you would tofu, or blend the fermented tofu and its marinade together into a sauce. Most methods of fermenting tofu involve growing molds on the tofu and then aging the molded tofu in brine and/or rice wine with various spices. The molded tofu is known as pizi. Microbial analysis has revealed that the molded pizi is typically dominated by molds of the genera Actinomucor, Rhizopus, and Mucor. Among the traditional methods of inoculation are placing slices or cubes of tofu on rice straw or pumpkin leaves and/or coating them with fresh wood ash. By some accounts, the cubes of tofu are partially dried and sterilized first in a minimally heated oven for 10 to 15 minutes. I've tried spontaneously growing molds on cubes of tofu packed in both straw, though not rice straw, and pumpkin leaves. The descriptions in the literature refer to white or gray mold growth. Shurtleff and Aoyagi describe a dense mat of fragrant white mycelium, while Steinkraus refers to grayish hair-like mycelium. The molds that developed spontaneously on my two experiments were yellow with patches of bright red, nothing suitable for consumption. But when I tried it with a pure culture sample of Actinomucor elegans that I obtained from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's culture collection, I had great results. After the fluffy white mold developed, I mixed brine, added rice beer and fresh chili peppers, and fermented the molded tofu in that. The molded and fermented tofu cubes developed a sublimely smooth texture and a compelling sharp flavor. They are extremely cheese-like and became more and more delicious with the passing weeks, until they went too far after about 3 months. I've also had great results fermenting tofu without molds using a method from the Chinese city of Shaoxing called Chao Daofu, or stinking tofu, which I prepared following a description by food writer Fuchsia Dunlop. Prior to fermenting the tofu, you must ferment amaranth stalks in brine to prepare a loo, the medium in which the tofu is fermented. Then you simply add cubes of tofu to this brine and leave them to ferment submerged in the jar or crock. Like much information on fermentation, Dunlop's account gave no specifics as to the length of fermentation. In the early days and weeks, the fermenting tofu smelled and tasted wonderful. Nothing was stinky about it whatsoever. As late as 6 weeks into the fermentation, the tofu tasted delicious to me, sharp and pungent, but in no way off-putting or challenging. However, when I went away for 3 weeks and tasted my fermenting tofu upon my return, it had developed the stinkiness suggested by its name. Hydrogen sulfide produced during the breakdown of one or more sulfur-containing amino acids is the source of the finished product's disgusting smell, explains Dunlop. This is the same gas that gives rotten eggs their notorious odor. According to Dunlop, Shaoxing street vendors who deep-fry the stinky tofu perfume their entire neighborhoods with this odor, which inspires incredible passion in its devotees. At this stage of development, I fed the stinking tofu to the compost, and the next batch I enjoyed while it was still fragrant and delicious. Even without preparing special brine, tofu can be incorporated into vegetable ferments. Usually, I put it up with kimchi seasonings, but it's also good plain, writes fermentation enthusiast Anna Root. It keeps well, unlike fresh tofu, and it's very easy to digest, even eaten raw. If you make it salty enough, it tastes like feta cheese. Troubleshooting. Surface mold on miso. You can be sure that a miso crock that sits fermenting, undisturbed for a year or longer, is likely to be covered with mold. Sometimes when a crock is first uncovered, the surface growth makes the miso look hideous. Sometimes it smells awful, too. Do not be afraid. Scrape the moldy layer off along with any miso that has been discolored by it and discard. Below it, the miso protected from air always looks, smells, and tastes good. Dry and shrunken miso. If long-fermenting miso is aged in a space that is heated, it will dry out and shrink over the course of its long fermentation. How to proceed depends upon how dry and shrunken it is. If it smells and looks fine once you scrape away the mold, simply add a little water and stir it in evenly to restore the miso to a pasty, spreadable texture. If the miso is hardened and feels like a brick, there may be no way to moisten it into a paste. If that is the case, discard it. Long-fermenting misos really require an unheated cellar space or burying crocks in the earth. If you wish to make miso in a heated living space, I would recommend trying shorter-fermenting sweet misos that take only several weeks. Ferment fine at ambient heated temperatures and do not age long enough to be dehydrated by dry heat. Moldy pockets throughout miso. Surface molds are easy to remove because they are limited to the surface. However, if you make miso and fail to pack it firmly enough into its vessel, leaving large air pockets, it is possible for those pockets of air to develop molds that you encounter as you dig the miso out of the crock. If it is limited to one or two pockets, you may be able to isolate them and remove the mold. If there are pockets throughout, removal may prove to be impossible. To avoid this problem, be sure to press miso firmly downward as you pack it into its fermentation vessel to eliminate air pockets.